So basically, Iran thinks it's winning. You and I kind of agree that Iran's more is winning more than the U.S. is winning. U.S. and Israel are blowing things up, but as the people of Vietnam can attest, blowing things up does not win a war. You know, we blew up Vietnam like nobody's business, but we didn't win, and that was with ground troops. There are about 2,000 Marines and the 82nd Airborne are headed to the war. John, first question for you: what do you think those troops are going to do? I mean, 2,000 troops aren't going to make a dent in a ground in a land invasion of Iran. I mean, what are they there for? Just support?
Probably, but I think that we shouldn't overlook the notion that this might be about Harg Island, which I think would be an absolute, utter, complete, and total disaster. Did you see the statement from the Iranian, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, I think it was? He said, we've been planning for something like this for 20 years. He said, we welcome the Americans to Harg Island, that's where their graves will be.
I mean, of course, that could just be rhetoric, but
asymmetrical warfare. They watched exactly how things played out in Iraq and Afghanistan, and they learned lessons from those wars. And so if the U.S. wants to send ground troops, the Iranians are welcoming the ground troops, because the Iranians know, just like you and I do. We were talking about this yesterday or the day before yesterday. We would need hundreds of thousands of troops if we intended to really, you know, put boots on the ground in Iran. And we're not doing that. We couldn't do it if we wanted to.
No, we don't have them. And they'd have to stay there.
Yeah, exactly.
It would have to be like the, you know, the first Afghan war, where the, you know, the Brits from 1839 to 1842 just camped out in Kabul. That worked out great for them, as I recall. Fantastic results. Everybody, for people who don't know that history, all but one of them were killed. Literally.
Yeah. And they left one to tell the story.
Yeah. Dr. William Bryden. I always forget. There's a fantastic painting called Signal Catastrophe of him arriving at like the British checkpoint, all covered, you know, filled with stab wounds and bullet wounds, like barely hanging on to his horse. What is going on here? I mean, the Israelis say they want to continue to fight for a few more weeks. Let's break it down. Two-part question for you, John. What the Israelis say they haven't accomplished all their war aims. Okay, what are those war aims? And then number two, why do they need a few more weeks to do that, right? And then number three, Trump clearly wants an off-ramp here. Why?
Yeah, he sure does want an off-ramp. Listen, the Israeli war aims, war goals are unchanged, even if the Israelis now acknowledge that they're impossible to achieve. It's the not just the decapitation of the Iranian government, but the removal of the entire theocracy, and more importantly, the removal of the IRGC. I think that both the Americans and the Israelis believe that they could work with the Iranian regular army. The regular army doesn't run a country. The IRGC runs the country. Hillary Clinton said something in 2009 that was surprisingly insightful, coming from Hillary. She said that Iran is actually not a theocracy. It's a military dictatorship. And I think that that's largely correct. Now, with that said, there is not a level of opposition to the Iranian government inside Iran sufficient to topple the regime. Mm-hmm. It's just not. Because even with sanctions, even with blockades, even with embargoes, the Iranian government is able to provide essentially what the Iranian people need to live. Issues of freedom, democracy, transparency, those are separate. I'm not endorsing the Ayatollahs in any way. I'm just saying you cannot rely on so-called intelligence from the likes of the MEK, the Mujahideen e-Khalq, which is exactly what the Israelis are doing. And then the Israelis either pass that intelligence to the U.S. or just make shit up out of whole cloth and pass it to the U.S. and call it intelligence. And the next thing we know, we're mired in a war that we can't win.
And what, unfortunately, thanks to the Reagan administration in the early days of the Islamic Revolution, there's no leftist party or organization that could organize the kind of overthrow of the government if that opportunity were to present itself. Having been there, I mean, it's been a while, but when I was there, you know, this was not a country that was desperately barely hanging on for dear life and waiting to be overthrown, right? I mean, it has an economy, it functions, basic services are provided. You know, it feels a lot like Turkey or Greece or, you know, anywhere like in Eastern Europe. You know, it's one of the better, you know, it's a modern functioning country. Yeah. And also there's a lot of space for, you know, out for disobeying the mullahs, right? Mm-hmm. People have parties. They all have parties after work at 5 o'clock, you know, at half of Tehran, all the blinds get drawn, music goes on low, bootleg scotch comes out. People are dancing. Women are wearing that, you know, they're not completely veiled. They have, the veil is hanging on barely by a thread to the back of their hair. You know, I mean, they wear the manteau, which is this sort of jacket like this that is sort of barely passes Islamic, you know, the strictures of the government. Right. But there's flirting in the malls. You know, I mean, it's not a bleak, repressive regime to the extent that would be necessary to really cause people who are making a fairly decent living to freak out and risk their lives fighting, you know, government troops and cops in the streets.
My partner is Iranian, Iranian American, and she frequently watches YouTube videos of just street life in mm-hmm. Tehran. It's just somebody's got a camera or a phone and they're just walking down the street. Mm-hmm. And the video will go for an hour. And all you see is normal daily life. Yeah. The restaurants are full. The little juice bars are full. Traffic is driving everywhere. People going about their normal business. Families are out walking around the parks. It's like, it's just a normal, normally functioning society. It's not the way most Americans imagine it.
No, and that's not to say that, like, I think, honestly, if there were a plebiscite, free and fair elections, and Iranians could vote for what form of government they wanted, it would not be the present one. Right. It would certainly not be a restoration of the monarchy or the dictatorial Shah's son. It would be something that looked like European parliamentary democracy, I think. But they're not going to get that vote, is the problem. And, you know, they can't. So for the time being, you know, inertia prevails.
That's it. That's the bottom line. Yeah.
And anyway, I don't think the U.S. is that interested in regime change anyway.
I don't either, actually.
I think this is about, you know, regional disruption. It's about, you know, it's about oil. It's about all the usual suspects. John, let's talk about, before we move on from Iran, Trump. Apparently, the U.S. has sent Iran a 15-point peace plan proposal. So the highlights include Iran would agree to fully dismantle its nuclear capabilities. There'd be a permanent commitment on Iran's part to never pursue nuclear weapons and a requirement that any already enriched uranium be handed over. You know, John, to me, that's almost like a punch list if I'm the Iranians and I didn't know what to do all the opposite stuff.
Because, and I'll add, what that sounds like to me is the JCPOA.
Yes, that's true. Mm-hmm. And they're not going to, I mean, so first, I mean, there's just not, they can't, there's no starting point here. John, if I'm the Iranians, I'm reading this as U.S. weakness.
Without any question. Mm-hmm. Without any question.
Just hang tight.
They laugh when they hear, the war's over. We win. We're going to start drawing down. Did you know, I just read yesterday in the Greek press, the USS Gerald Ford is in Crete. It's not even in the region anymore.
Really?
It's in Crete. Yeah.
What's it doing there? Are they fixing the toilets?
Supply, fix those toilets.
Yeah. Wow. So maybe that's why they, maybe that's why we're sending the 2000, 82nd Airborne guys in the Marines.
Yeah.
We have to, we're just switching them out. I mean, it's, you know, getting, it's still, so go ahead.
Getting back to the issue of the Marines. I'm sorry.
No, please.
The only thing I can envision, Ted, is we send Marines, let's say, to Karg Island, which is where most of the refineries are. And I'm struggling to think of what there would be that would appropriately and adequately protect them. Why wouldn't the Iranians just shell Karg Island and kill as many Marines as they possibly could? Why wouldn't they?
You see, I don't understand, John. Why would the United States or the supporters of the administration be lulled into thinking that capturing Karg Island is the key to reopening the Strait of Hormuz? It doesn't reopen the Strait of Hormuz. It just puts you, you know, it just creates a big fat target for the Iranians.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Also, by the way, if your object of reopening the Strait of Hormuz is to try to get oil, global oil prices back under control, shutting down a major oil supplier and refinery doesn't seem like really the right move. And, you know, Iranian oil, it's a global market. Iranian oil is as good as all other oil, right? I mean, they want that out in the market. That's why they've de-sanctioned Iranian oil at sea.
Yes. Yeah. John D. Cockefeller, exactly my point. He says the Marines will be able to take Karg Island somewhat easily. Totally agree. The issue will be holding Karg Island, which would be virtually impossible.
That's the American, that's always the American wars of our generation, John, right? Invasion's easy. Occupation is hard. I mean, you know, the Brits in 1839, they rolled right into Kabul. No muss, no fuss.
Yep.
You know, it's all right. Anything else you want to talk about that? I mean, obviously the Iranians are not going to give up their nuclear program. They'll accelerate it if they have any brains at all.
I would. You know, I gave an interview yesterday to a podcast in Australia. It's the biggest podcast in Australia. We were talking about oil. And I said that the New York Times, it's in today's New York Times, but they posted it yesterday. They have a graphic showing where Strait of Hormuz oil goes. Literally not 1 ounce of it comes to the United States. So we don't care one way or the other. But Australia, Japan, South Korea, India, they get all of their oil through the Strait of Hormuz.
And their countries now with three, some of those countries are down to 3 weeks of supply.
That's right.
They're literally going to be like Cuba right now. But I mean, John, we do care, right? I want to push back a little bit. We do care about that because it's a global market. So if there's a shortfall there, it affects the price of oil globally. Want to support the show with style? Go to deprogram.live and check out our merch. That's deprogram.live, or check out the description below. Thanks for watching.